What is a group that you don't know a lot about, you disagree with, that you can lean into to better understand and engage? Well, why is this important? Because you have no idea, in the midst of challenging your perspective, the opportunities of growth and learning that you can get, but also the transformative power of those meaningful relationships.
Hello, Optimizer listeners. Before we get started, I'd like to take a moment to point out the elephant in the room and acknowledge the devastating wildfires here in Los Angeles. As a resident of this city for over two decades, it is heartbreaking to watch our community endure such overwhelming loss. For the last 2 years, we have already metaphorically watched the entertainment industry burn to the ground, and now we've literally had to watch it burn in not one, but several amazing neighborhoods with real people, real families, and real communities. Whether you've been directly impacted by the fires, as many of our own students have been, or if you've been indirectly impacted by evacuations, poor air quality, housing evacuees, or simply just watching the news helplessly and hopelessly, know that I, my Optimizer team, and our global creative community are here to support you. In times of crisis, as cliche as it may seem, I often refer to the seminal quote from Mr. Rogers. When I was a boy and I would see scary things in the news, my mother would say to me, "Look for the helpers. You will always find people who are helping." Based on the overwhelming amount of support that I've seen across our entire city during this crisis, I have no doubt that we are a city full of helpers who are up to the task of rebuilding the city even better than it was before. No matter where you may be listening from right now, please do me a favor and stay safe and be well. All right, now on to today's show. My name is Zach Arnold, and I'm a former Hollywood film and television editor turned career strategist and the creator of Optimize Yourself, where I help artists, creatives, and storytellers just like you design the more balanced, more sustainable, and more fulfilling creative career that you deserve. In a nutshell, I'm Tim Ferriss meets Ted Lasso, minus the mustache, because I am obsessed with both learning everything I can about optimizing human potential while also inspiring you to realize yours. If you are ready to step outside your comfort zone, let's dive right in and unlock the optimized version of you. Hello, and welcome to the Optimize Yourself podcast, where I share honest and candid conversations with best-selling authors, world-class athletes, Hollywood legends, elite experts in a variety of fields, as well as everyday people that are achieving extraordinary things. It means the world to me that with all the podcast choices out there, you have chosen to invest your valuable time, energy, and attention with me. Now, before we get started, don't forget to visit optimizeyourself.me/podcast so you can subscribe, leave a review, and so you can also download your unique customized podcast playlist where I'm going to send you the five best expert interviews from our archives to help you achieve your specific goals. So on that note, without further ado, let's get right to today's guest. All right. Well, if you're good, I'm good.
Good. Let's do it. Let's do it. This is how we do it.
I would say that's a great place to start today's conversation, given how much energy I think you are going to bring, and I'm going to do my best to match it. But for those that are listening, I'm here today with a Justin Jones Fosu, who is literally the embodiment of energy. Like, even if you have no interest in diversity, equity, inclusion, disagreements, agreements, or otherwise, you just want to go for a run right now or frankly lift a building, watch your TED Talk for 15 minutes and they're going to be ready to go. Like, one of the most engaging, energizing TED Talks I've ever seen. It is not your dad's TED Talk. Let me just say that. So in addition to that, you're a dedicated father of two, as you say, spirited children, which does not surprise me at all. You've recently conquered one of the famed seven summits. And for those that don't know, that's the tallest peak on each continent. You're the CEO and founder of Work Meaningful. And for the sake of today's conversation, you are the author of the book, I Respectfully Disagree, How to Have Difficult Conversations in a Divided World. And holy shit, Justin, are we in a divided world right now?
Oh, yes. Yes, we are. And I mean, let's talk about the elephant in the room, right? The biggest disagreement that's on everybody's mind really right now is, could Leonardo DiCaprio have survived on a little plank of wood in Titanic? I mean, that's number one disagreement of all time. So
I was too scared to bring it up. So I'm very glad that you brought it up, because I was too scared to address that one. However, here's what's so funny. And even though you and I literally have never connected before we got in this Zoom call, I get a sense of kindred spirits because one of the things that I teach my students, and I literally have it written in this document, is we're going to start by addressing the elephant in the room. Yeah. I'm the kind of person where most people are like, I don't know, should we talk about it? I'm like, hey, everybody, nice to see you. Hey, what's that? Let's talk about that, shall we? So I would say that there are numerous elephants in the room around this conversation of disagreement, political or otherwise. But for the sake of this conversation, where I at least want to start it, is I feel the elephant in the room is that for the last several years, DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, has been a huge buzzword. It's been all over the news. It's been in politics. It's causing cultural wars. And what I'm having a hard time understanding is what is it that seems to be broken about this initiative? And I want to clarify that when I say it's broken, I don't mean that it's something we don't need. Where I get stuck is that, and this is where we're probably going to get deeper into morals and values and how we kind of, you know, address those. But I can't imagine a world where somebody's convinced me that somebody doesn't have the fundamental rights to be heard and understood and have their perspective valued based on the color of their skin, based on a sexual preference, an ethnicity or otherwise. Yeah. But I would also say, looking at it from the outside and you're more on the inside, the DEI initiatives don't really seem to be working. The system kind of seems to be broken. So somebody that's on the inside, what are you seeing?
Yeah, so let me be very clear. I've been doing this work for over 2 decades. And probably for the first third of it, I felt like I was doing it wrong. And I didn't know it until I kind of reassessed, like, all right, I'm saying the same things and I'm not getting any different results. And why is that? And I realized there's several things, but I'll call out three. Number one, it was limited in terms of how it was normally talked about, right? And so oftentimes when people think you hear the word diversity, what immediately comes up? The things you mentioned, right? Race. Gender, identity, right? And we started challenging that notion is that diversity in its simplest form just means difference. And we can come from the same place, look very similar, and still be very different. And what I realized is that we tried to run to these micro areas that we rightfully wanted to solve, grievances, discrimination, and things that were happening. But we hadn't even helped people to understand the foundational level about how do I value difference for difference sake? And you'll never get to the micro until you first focus on the macro. And so number one is that everybody is a part of diversity. No matter what you look like, where you come from, all these things, and what we talk about, just the leadership 101, is that people are less likely to engage in solutions if they don't feel like they're a part of it at all. And so what I'm trying to very clearly communicate is that diversity is everybody, not just the big three. And when I mention the big three, I'm not talking about LeBron, D-Wade, and Bosh, right? Or the old big three, the new ones. I'm sorry, I apologize. The new school of the old Curry, Draymond Green, and the Maverick. Now, leave now on Maverick. Oh, we still love you, Clay. But the big three is that. And you know why I know this is because if you remember the 2020 primaries, I remember I was listening and the newscasters would come on the TV and they'd be like, we've just been to Iowa. We're headed to New Hampshire, but wait till we get to the more diverse states. And I remember screaming at the TV screen, like, no, I've been to Iowa, New Hampshire. They're very diverse. The question is, what type of diversity are we talking about? And that's the thing. So I encourage people to use prefixes. When you're talking about diversity, talk about what kind. Are you talking about religious diversity, political diversity, ability diversity, gender diversity, ethnic, whatever that thing may be, because oftentimes we're excluding whole groups of people, even in how we talk about diversity. So that's number one, is just how we've defined it. We limited it to the three, the big three. Number two, we've often talked about it from a very shame-based approach. Right? It's all the things you're doing wrong. And imagine you with your significant other, your partner, your spouse, and you're every single time you come home, they tell you, here's all the things you did wrong. You didn't do the dishes. You didn't do this. And some of the listeners are like, are you in my household? Right? But that is demoralizing and it flies in the face of motivational theory. Motivational theory is that people are more likely to continue and or repeat behaviors when it's approached from an abundance perspective rather than a deficit. Well, it's what's called positive reinforcement. So we meet people right where they are because every single person has been inclusive already in their lives. Even when Uncle Bob comes to the family dinner and you go and talk to Uncle Bob and Uncle Bob is a little bit different, but you still love Uncle Bob because he's part of your family. That's in a moment of inclusion. And so that's one of the things. And the third thing is that we approach it from this perfection place that you almost have to be perfect at it in order to fully engage. And so I love Carol Dweck's work on mindset because she talks about growth versus fixed-based mindset. And we often apply diversity and inclusion from a fixed-based mindset, is that I only want to do it if I feel like I'm better than other people in it. I don't want to appear ignorant to other people. And when I fail, I look at it as final versus growth-based is my only competition is myself. That if I fail, it's just another data point of learning. And if I don't know something, I don't know it yet. And so until we can approach it in many ways, and those three things and a multitude of others, I think for a lot of people, there's a lot of resistance, there's going to be pushback, and we're not going to see some of the results that we desire.
First of all, what I'm wondering now is how in the world did you get access to my private Google Doc with all of my notes? Because you and I are talking from the exact same playbook. It is eerie because literally yesterday I spent all day and have spent all week putting together a 1-hour presentation, helping people understand fixed mindset versus growth mindset, the work of Carol Dweck, and also introducing, I'm assuming you're familiar with Eduardo Briseño, who essentially added on and layered that it's not just about mindset, it's also about making sure you're either in learning mode or performance mode, right? Yes. So I actually think a lot of that's going to factor in today, and I made sure to make in my notes, let's talk about mindset fixed versus growth, because that goes far beyond just the work that I do or whether I'm an athlete or whether I'm in corporate America or I'm a creative. Yeah. It goes as far as our identities and how we identify to others and our malleability and our beliefs, right? And our viewpoints and our perspectives. But I want to go back to Uncle Bob for a second.
Yeah.
So somebody could be listening to this in a week, in a month, or a decade, and I think it's going to be irrelevant when they listen to it. But just to give people a little bit of a sense of where we're coming from with the timeliness of our conversation, we're recording this shortly after the 2024 election. So there's a lot going on right now in the atmosphere about politics, about inclusion, about lack thereof. And it has gone so far beyond, well, I think we should have a 12% tax cut. Well, I think it should be 18%. Like the issues aren't even a conversation anymore. This is about a war of identities and a war of beliefs and values. And I do my best to make sure that when I'm doing this podcast and when I'm working with my students, and I know that there are going to be certain assumptions that I'm probably not seeing in myself, but my goal is you probably can't figure out which direction I would vote for because I really want to have a broad perspective of all viewpoints. And it doesn't matter. And this is one of the things I found so fascinating about this election is that both sides, it didn't matter which side of the fence you were on, both sides were completely and totally convinced this is the end of democracy as we know it.
Yes.
It literally went that far. So I want to take it from this huge ideal back to the dinner table. Right.
Yeah.
And I want to start looking at this from a very practical perspective. First, personally, then I want to bring it into the workplace. But Uncle Bob is coming over to dinner and Uncle Bob did not vote the way that I voted. And Uncle Bob is literally supporting a person that thinks they're going to take my rights away, which again, both sides feel that way. So let's just start literally at the smallest place imaginable, Uncle Bob at the dinner table. How do we manage these kinds of situations right now?
Yeah. And I love that you bring up Uncle Bob because where we managed it, and this is what we dug into our research for the book, is that it doesn't start at the dinner table with Uncle Bob. It starts before the dinner table with Uncle Bob. And what do I mean by that? So we created what we call the five pillars of bridging the divide. And we initially had four, but as we dug deeper, we realized most of the conflict resolution, the disagreement conversations, and all the stuff, the books and stuff, dealt with in the moment challenges, right? In the moment conflict. But we started saying, if this is going to be a part of our mindset, if something that's just part of our behaviors and learning, why are we doing it in a moment? It should be a part of our absolute continual learning. And so our pillar number one is challenge your perspective, which happens before any disagreement even occurs. And you may say, well, Justin, what does that look like? So one of those things, a lot of people have these what we call open door policies. Like, hey, if you need me, I'm available to talk, right? Even as creatives, we're like, hey, leave me alone and let me work on my project. But if you need me, I'll be available on Microsoft Teams from Tuesday to Thursday, right? And we've done that. And we've challenged this notion of open door policy to an out the door policy, where we go out to hear the stories, perspectives, and learn about others and hear their stories. The foundation of this is that we should seek to be more interested than interesting. And let me give you two strategic ways to lean into this. Number one is what we call the Circles of Grace Challenge. And a Circles of Grace Challenge is really essentially this. Every 6 to 12 months, I go to events, experiences, and or I engage with people in either which I don't know a lot about and or those I disagree with. And I go asking two questions. What did I learn about these events, experiences, and their people? And what did I learn about myself as I experienced them? Not convincing them of my perspective, but just going to learn and build up those disagreement muscles. Why is that important? Because the more and more we intentionally expose ourselves to differing viewpoints, differing perspectives, things that challenge us, the better we are in that moment where we're engaging with Uncle Bob. Number two, strategy. One meaningful connection per week where we intentionally build into our calendar 15 to 20 minutes to hear the stories and perspectives of others. That's another way that we move to an out-the-door policy. And if you're like, Justin, that's too much because that's 52.14 times a year in a leap year. Well, then flip the W upside down and make it one meaningful connection per month. And maybe it's 1 hour lunch. But be very intentional to not only engage with people that already agree with you, think like you, believe like you, look like you, but to intentionally choose to go and hear the stories and perspectives. And if you're like, oh, that's great for the extroverts, because I'm an introvert. Well, then maybe it's volunteering. Maybe it's going and participating in a large project that might ingratiate you to informal contact with people where you can develop those one-on-one conversations in meaningful ways. So there are ways to lean into it, but the number one thing is to challenge our perspective before we even get to the dinner table with Uncle Bob.
Yeah, I love all of that. And what I really love about it is that I'm a very big believer in building in habits and systems in our lives. And essentially to all but blatantly steal, or it's probably pretty much blatantly stealing from James Clear, I want to make sure that all of my actions are a vote for my identity. Right. Yes. And if I want to be the kind of person that's willing to listen to somebody else's perspectives and have an open mind, I need to see that on my calendar. It's not, well, I want to wake up and my vision is that I'm going to be a more open-minded person. Great. What the hell does that mean? Show me what you're actually doing on your calendar and your Apple reminders list and your text messages that are a vote for, I want to become a more open-minded person. So I actually want to dig into this a little bit deeper because I talk a lot about the process of networking. And to most of my audience and frankly to myself, networking, four-letter word. Yeah. But I reframe it as that it's not just about building connections. It's not about collecting transactions. Yes. It's about building meaningful relationships. And I talk to my students about how you need to make the habit of literally sending an outreach email that scares you once a week to somebody that you admire, you want to connect with, you're seeking mentorship. Because literally, and science has proven this, there's no more clear determinant for the quality of your life than the quality of your relationships. Yes. Right. But I think the lens that so many people look at it through, I want to connect with more people like me. I want to surround myself with peers, which I think is great, especially for the introverts that really feel they have very little support and they just kind of they live in their cave. Right. Like I always make the joke that, hey, everybody, you haven't seen me in 6 months, just came out from under my bridge. Right. There's a lot of truth to that. But I think that the step that most people take that's uncomfortable, I'm going to surround myself with like-minded peers, which is a good thing. But I think what you're bringing to this is a next step. It's not just about like-minded peers. It's I can't think of a better way to say it, but different-minded peers. How would you frame that? And how can we actually be much more practical and clear about what this looks like as a regular action?
Yeah. So I love that different-minded peers. I think I still want to echo the thing of building into that habit, right? Of not only just individually, but we've done this corporately about the Circles of Grace Challenge. And y'all, I didn't create that for anybody else except Justin. I realized my mom used to take us to events that we disagreed with growing up. And I remember sitting there like, Mom, why are we here? We don't agree with this. But she was planting these seeds in humanity. And this really became the foundation of the book, is this statement that we can vehemently disagree with someone's ideology and yet still passionately pursue their humanity. And I realized that I was confining myself to my circles of comfort. And I wanted to challenge that. And so I created what at that time called the 6 month challenge. That are now called the Circles of Grace Challenge. So I want to really encourage people to lean into asking the question, if you, over the course of the next 6 to 12 months, what is a group that you don't know a lot about, you disagree with, that you can lean into to better understand and engage? Well, why is this important? I'm getting goosebumps thinking about this. Because you have no idea, in the midst of challenging your perspective, the opportunities of growth and learning that you can get, but also the transformative power of those meaningful relationships. Let me tell you why. There's a guy named Daryl Davis, who is an African-American blues musician who had connections and first connected with a Ku Klux Klan member over music, right? And then he had these conversations, he realized, wow, there's so much misunderstanding and so many misperceptions that he intentionally started engaging Ku Klux Klan members. He started going to Klan rallies. I mean, he started doing all these things, and over 200 of them ended up turning in their robes because of their friendship with him, their meaningful relationships. And so I tell people, you have no idea the impact that you can have. Now, maybe we don't start there, but there was an opportunity for impact. The second piece of that is, to your point, and I love how you approach this, is don't approach networking from the normal networking perspective, right? This is why I tell people I generally don't like normal networking events, because we're asking the two questions. Where do you work? What do you do, right? And I just start making up stuff.
Oh, dear Lord. Right. The first thing I'm literally going to be hosting a networking event tonight for all my students. And my one rule is you are not allowed to start any conversation with what do you do or what are you working on?
Yes.
Those are my rules. Other than that, you could talk about anything you want, but you cannot start the conversation that way. That's always my rule.
I love that. You and I are definitely kindred spirits, because my first book, Your Why Matters Now, we have what we call the negative two happy hour. You couldn't ask those two questions. We gave people like a list of 5 to 10 sample questions. If you've taken a vacation, what's the best vacation? Where somewhere in this city that you've never got to experience? If you could create one additional thing that you've never created, what could that be? I mean, so there's so many awesome questions, but I want to speak to the realistic nature of that, because you may go to some events, not yours, but you may go to some events and people still may ask you those questions. And I don't want to be a jerk, right? I was recently doing this in Charlotte. I was doing, a program for Leadership Charlotte. And these two bankers were like having this conversation with me, right? It's the normal thing. What do you do? Where do you work? Right. And I'm not going to be a jerk. So I answered and da, da, da. And then, but I realized that we have the opportunity to transform the conversation into more meaningful ones. And so instead of asking them that question back, I was like, oh, and as I listened to them and engaged them, I was like, oh, I noticed you mentioned you've been here for 17 years. You've been here for 6 years. Like, what's something in Charlotte that you've never have done, but always have thought about doing? And it paused and made them go, huh? Because they didn't have a normal surface level canned response for this. And when we go into the relationship buildings, I want you to ask the type of questions that don't have normal canned responses to them. Right? Like, not, oh, how's the weather? Oh, are you enjoying the sports? Are you, but something that's meaningful. You don't have to go deep. Like, what's been a meaningful moment in your life that shaped who you are today? Right? But it can be these moments of just like, wow, I just noticed as you, it's creative. Like, is there something you've never created, but just is always on the top of your mind to create? Right? And those are the types of people that it makes people go, actually, and it develops these moments where the dopamine's released and people actually connect with you more when it allows them to take time to think and process even something historical, like what's the most memorable thing that you've ever created in your life? And guess what? People are going to be like, oh, let me tell you. Now, guess what? They've just thought about a moment that was memorable, potentially happy, that had a lot of great experience for them. And you've now been attached to that. Those are those opportunities to build relationships. And when you do a follow-up with them, you can recall that thing. Like, I hope you're creating more of that one painting that nobody else got, but that's just hanging up in your bathroom.
So all of this, by the way, I love. It reminds me of a quote, one of my favorite quotes, and it's going to be a little cheesy, but I work in the entertainment industry, so everybody's just going to have to go with it. It's the Ted Lasso quote, "Be curious, not judgmental." And it sounds like that's very much what you're talking about. However, easier said than done, right?
Very much so.
If you're going to have a conversation with like-minded peers, you're at a networking event or an industry get-together, you have similar interests, maybe you work in different sectors of it, it's not too terribly hard to be curious and not judgmental. But now all of a sudden, you're either voluntarily or have found yourself involuntarily being with different-minded peers that may see the world differently. Being curious and not judgmental is difficult. So now I want to start to get to the heart of this idea of respectfully disagreeing, because I think right now that's really, really hard for a lot of people to be able to walk and say, I absolutely disagree with your viewpoint, but I see our shared humanity. It's only I disrespectfully disagree with you, and it creates all this animosity and this separation. So let's start getting to the heart of this idea of understanding disagreement. And let's just get real right now, because There are a lot of friendships that are breaking up. I'm literally seeing people's marriages are breaking up because one person voted differently than the other one. Because again, this is no longer about issues or policy. This is about morals, values, and character. Yeah. So it seems great to respectfully disagree, but how the hell do we get there?
Yeah. Let me preface this by there's another category that we didn't even realize existed. Not just disrespectful disagreement, but disrespectful agreement. And that has been something that has pervaded our society and workplaces as well. And what does that mean? This disrespectful agreement is going to be like, we could be having a conversation. I'm like, Zach, I think that was a great idea. But then behind your closed doors, I'm talking to Jenny. I'm like, Jenny, what was Zach thinking? That was stupid. I don't even know why we would do that. And I'm in the moment agreeing with you, but behind your back, disrespecting you. But let me give you the other side of that. There's also this aspect of culture, family structure, sometimes situation where we were taught. Some people were taught as kids that children should be seen and not heard. And they brought that into the workplace. They brought that into their friendships. They're just after keeping the peace, right? And they're I'm not going to rock the boat too much. But in their silence and even in their tepid disagreement or tepid agreement, they're disrespecting themselves. And so I do want to give highlight that's also existing because there's some people who are like, oh, I'm good. I don't have these big blow up disagreements. And it's because they might be disrespectfully agreeing. And so how do we lean into this? So pillars two and pillar three, I think, are very beneficial for us. Pillar two is be the student. And when you're being the student, you focus more on listening and learning rather than lecturing. And so when I go into a conversation with someone that might be ideologically different, I don't go into it of I have to prove my point. I have to prove my perspective because everybody's trying to do that right now. It's about winning the debate. And we've asked, what if the new winning was learning? It changes how we approach conversations where we can be more curious and learn. And there's a concept called the inverted U theory. And inverted U theory normally applies to performance, but it's also been attached to learning, is that there's two places we don't learn effectively. When one, we think we don't know anything, and two, we think we know absolutely everything. And so the person who doesn't think they know anything, that's why the Circle of Grace Challenge or One Meaningful Connection per Week or diving into deeper gets them on the arc of learning, which helps them build that motivation. But the person who thinks they know absolutely everything, this person, well, one will live longer and realize that we're never stopped learning until we're done. Our journey is over and that a person's perspective is different. Pillar three is cultivate your curiosity. And that's where our focus is filling in the gaps more with curiosity rather than conclusions. And in fact, our brains are working against us. And I really want to call this out to people because people think that they're horrible people or I'm not engaging in ways. And I want to share this because Monday through Friday, you take this exit. If you drive Monday through Friday, one day you're supposed to go straight. But what do? You take the exit. Why? Because your brain wants to conserve energy for things it thinks it doesn't know. And we're getting all this information, second, third-hand information, news, social media, all these places. And so right before we get to know somebody, we end up taking the exit because our brain wants to conserve that energy. But instead of taking the exit, what if we drove forward towards some really amazing humans? And here's how we do it. We go by realizing that we operate by what we call the dotted line dilemma. So let me ask you a quick question. Don't think about this. Just want you to answer real quick. Even those listening, I want you to answer real quick. What's the right side of the road to drive on? Go.
To the right side.
Of course, right? But what if you're in Australia?
Yeah, I figured that was coming.
Right? What if you're in UK or Jamaica? And I was recently on a podcast with Australians and they were like, the left side. It's like, why? They're like, because you want to be safe. And I was like, see, this is why our context, our environment, all this stuff shapes us that we end up immediately making these quick judgments. And that's how our brain works. And so we have to be intentional to challenge those moments. And so how do we do that? Well, we would call this by listening to the power of three. So as you're listening to somebody and they might think differently, believe differently, our normal inclination is to jump in, to tell them why they're wrong, to tell them you don't have the facts, you don't have the real numbers, if you only knew this situation. But what if we listened at least into the third level of the conversation to better understand? And so how does that apply? Zach, how are you doing today? I'm fine. Oh, I'm fine too. That's power of one. Power of two. Zach, how are you doing today? I'm fine. Well, what makes you fine? I heard this interesting bald head speaker. I remember that bald head speaker. Like, that's power of two. But power of three goes at least into the third level because our goal in listening and engaging with people is to better understand how they got there. Not for us to think about if we can understand if we would get there. And that's the journey of having the conversation and bridging the divide is those two things, being the student and cultivating the curiosity.
My sincerest apologies for the interruption, but if you're a creative professional who spends long hours at your workstation, not only is the following promo not an interruption, but listening has the potential to change your life. Because working with a topo mat underneath you at a height-adjustable workstation is a game changer. Let's learn a little bit more from ErgoDriven co-founder and CEO Kit Perkins, creator of the topo mat.
The topo mat is the first anti-fatigue mat designed specifically for standing desks. The real benefit of a standing desk is movement. We found bringing in this cushioned terrain under your feet, your brain just subconsciously engages and you wander around and you get that movement at the standing desk that you need without even having to think about it at all.
People will come to me at an event or a panel and they'll say, I got the topo mat because of you. Even when they had a mat, once they used this one, it was a total game changer.
We've just heard time and time again that with topo, we've kind of hit the sweet spot that it's the right premium quality materials and a right shape that people are actually getting benefit out of this stuff.
You spend more time here than anywhere if you do creative work the way that I do. So I would rather be driving around in a Ferrari than a Ford Pinto. And I feel like this is the Ferrari of the standing mat.
One of the things you don't realize is that at a standing desk, your main interface to the world, your body's main interface to the world is the ground. If you're going to invest in anything at that Ferrari level, it should be what you're standing on.
Well, my goal is that for anybody that is a creative professional like myself that's stuck in front of a computer for inordinate amounts of time of their waking life, they're doing it standing on a topo mat. So you and I, my friend, one edit station at a time are going to change the world.
I like it. That's a utopian vision I can get on board with.
If you're a creative professional looking for a simple and affordable way to stay active, energetic, and focused while spending long hours at your height adjustable workstation, I can't stress enough how important it is to have the right mat underneath you, which is why I continue to share the topo mat as my number one product recommendation. To learn more about the topo mat and purchase yours, visit optimizeyourself.me/topo. That's T-O-P-O.
I love all of that. So now I'm going to start just throwing all these challenges
at
you, right? I mean, basically, my goal is to make this as hard for you as humanly possible.
Oh, I love this.
Right? So I want to have a conversation with somebody, a meaningful conversation, and I'm going to go out of my way to make sure that maybe it's not something like you said, I'm not literally going to go to a Klan rally on day one, but I want to really find somebody where I'm pretty confident in some way their viewpoints are different than mine. Right. Yeah. And I want to talk about some of the issues that are going on, whether it's with religion, whether it's with all the, you know, these kind of hot button topics, and immediately it's like, nope, sorry. Off limits. I don't talk about politics. I don't talk about this or that or the other thing. I feel like there's a lot of that right now because people want to have their safe space. That's not helping anything other than it's avoiding conflict, but it's not resolving conflict. So if I start having these conversations where either that's the reaction or that's my own reaction, it's like, nope, sorry, this is a politics-free zone.
Yeah.
How do we start to manage that so we can have a meaningful conversation?
Ooh, this is why I love that. I love your challenges because this is now the gray space and I love operating in the gray. So it operates differently, but the foundational level to this is, Zach, who is the only person that you and I can control?
This guy.
Yeah, our kids. And so the interesting thing, or our pets, if you don't know.
Well, until they're 18, myself and my children.
It doesn't work even.
And depending on your viewpoints, by the way, relevant to the conversation, maybe your wife or your spouse, right?
But that's also true. So, but like, we're the only person that we can control. So if a person doesn't want to have a conversation with me, I'm going to tell you what old Justin used to do. Old Justin didn't deal with rejection well. So old Justin would burn the bridge down. Like, it's cool. I didn't want to have a conversation with you anyway, right? Newer Justin is improving and growing that I'm keeping the bridge open. And so if they don't want to have the conversation, I'm like, hey, if you're ever open to having that type of conversation, I'd love to have it with me. Love to have it with you. Let me know. Now ball's in their court. We can't force anybody to have any type of conversation. And even right now, there are people who I've encouraged to take a break, to not have these conversations right now. And that's the boundary that they need because they actually might damage relationships in the midst of being heated, not feeling like they're at a place in their mental health that they can actually have productive and meaningful conversations about it. Now, but I want to caution people that you can't live in that space forever. And that's the difference between a boundary and a barrier. A boundary is a momentary moment that allows for you to operate in a brave space, for you to be able to create these somewhat conditions to be able to have healthy conversations. But a barrier completely cuts the person off. And that's where I think some people are. So some people might need a month. Some people may need 2 weeks. Some people may need 3 months to really get in a brave space where they can actually have these conversations. So that's number one. Number two is if you're engaging with someone, maybe you feel that way, then maybe you need to take a momentary break. But I want us to come back to maybe it's not the politics. Maybe it's not diving into the thing that's the biggest challenging thing for you, if even if you've attached it to your identity. Maybe it's identifying something that's low to medium in your ideological continuum, right? We call it the high commitment versus low commitment in our ideological perspective. And maybe you start there of just having conversations with people about something like if you're dealing with something like gun rights or gun safety or gun control, right? That you might be invested in, but it's not hardcore attached to your value systems. And you start having these kind of like, hey, one of the things I'm trying to do is I'm trying to hear from different perspectives from people. I'm trying to learn and hear journeys. Now, I want you to be very careful. In going into these conversations, you have to communicate, one, your vulnerability. Two, communicate that you're trying to learn and not trying to have a debate with someone. And three, explicitly express your curiosity. Not like, hey, I notice you think differently about, you know, gun control and gun safety. So tell me why you believe that. No, that's not going to work. Immediately defensive wall is going to come up. People aren't going to talk to you. But if we go into it from a posture of, hey, you know, I'm trying to do my best just to learn about different perspectives and hear different viewpoints. And one of the things that could be really helpful for me is I'd really just love to hear your perspective and viewpoint. We don't have to engage mine unless you want to, you know, after the conversation, but I really just want to understand. Help me understand. Those are ways we go into conversations with that level of vulnerability, that level of humility, that people are willing when, you know, what's one of the old adages that, and I hope you love this one, is that the teacher appears when the student is ready. And I think that we go into conversations trying to be teachers and wonder why we're butting heads with so many people because everybody's trying to teach right now versus people trying to learn. So those are some practical ways to lean into those types of conversations. But I wouldn't start off with the thing that you detest the most. I was doing a learning session with Toyota and a lady, she's like, I can't respectfully disagree with people who believe in Hitler or the values of Hitler, because she was Jewish. Mm-hmm. And I was like, damn, I understand how you got there. And I was like, let's not start there. let's start with something else, because there's hundreds of things that you can lean into conversations like with Uncle Bob, where you can have the conversation, pull Uncle Bob to the side, where you're not creating this dinner table spectacle, but like, hey, Uncle Bob, I noticed, you know, you may have voted in this way, and I just want to learn. I want to better understand. That's the approach that we can take that is more meaningful.
So then just to clarify, you're saying I shouldn't start the conversation with, what the hell is wrong with you? Why do you see it this way? You're saying that's not the best strategy? Because if so, I might have to rethink a few things.
Yeah, I think you need to rethink a few things.
Yeah,
and that's why I tell people, take a break, right? Because if you're going to start conversations like that, let's be honest. When's the last time somebody changed their mind because you called them stupid, dumb, or that's idiotic? Like, it never happens, nor does it create these relationships that are able to come together in meaningful ways. So, take a different page.
Yeah. So obviously I'm being, you know, sarcastic here.
I know. I'm
right. But the idea here and the thing that I want to dig a little bit deeper into, and I'm glad that you just went right for the jugular. You're like, I'm Jewish and I can't support anybody that believes in the things that Hitler believes in. Like that's just, you know, kind of one of these fundamental conversations that we're hearing right now. And hopefully that conversation has changed by the people listen to by the time people listen. I don't know if that's going to be the case, but I mean, that's just like, you're talking deep core values about the value of a human life based on their ethnicity, their background, their religious beliefs. Mm. Like that's when you're getting to the core of it, right?
Yeah.
So I'm just going to take this from my own personal perspective, because I've been thinking about this a lot lately, where I try to consider myself an open-minded person. And I am very much one that my entire life, I've kind of been the mediator, right? Like my joke is I'm Switzerland. In every conflict, in every relationship, whether it's professional, whether it's personal, I'm the problem solver mediator. Everybody comes to me and says, how do I deal with this? How do I, you know, we're in the middle of this argument, or like, how would I resolve it? I feel I'm very good at being that mediator. But then one of the things you mentioned is that sometimes we're not as good at kind of reading the label from inside the jar, and we have these assumptions we're not seeing. So I'm just going to kind of walk through one of my own viewpoints where I'm a little bit stuck. Let's go. So right now, there are certain core fundamental beliefs that nobody's going to convince me otherwise that it's wrong and or I need to see it from a different perspective, right?
Yeah.
One of them is that I really believe that the character of a person matters, how they treat people matters. I believe the strength of a person's values matter. I believe that regardless of what you look like, whatever you think, whatever you believe, whoever you love, you have the right to do those things as long as you're not infringing on somebody else's right to do or believe those same things, right? So there's a lot of different policies and issues, but I can't imagine a world where somebody's going to convince me otherwise to see those things from a different perspective. So that makes me feel like maybe there's a bias, maybe there's assumptions, but I don't see a world where somebody's going to convince me like, oh, you're right. Character doesn't matter. I don't care if you treat people like shit and you disrespect them. So when it comes to core fundamental values, example, I'm Jewish. I cannot support people that support the policies of Hitler. How do we start to respectfully disagree? I don't know what color it is in your spectrum, but there's nothing gray about this.
So for me, I'm going to be honest with you, this is always gray. And here is why, right? Which is pillar number four. And I'm glad you went there. It's seek the gray. And because we live in a nuanced world, we have these perspectives. If it's a concept, psychological term called naive realism, that if people just had the same set of facts that I had, they would obviously agree with the same things that I agree with, right? And not everybody agrees from a character perspective. Not everybody agrees. Is that the best way to get the business results, right? Is how Steve Jobs treated people. He got some amazing results. Now, Tim Cook may treat people very differently, but he's also getting different type of results with Apple, right? And so there's this myriad of gray space that exists. And this is one of the things we've been actually rallying against. This whole concept about open-mindedness. We love open mind. Open mind is great. I love, you know, there are things that we should all at times, and that's why the Circle of Grace Challenge is helpful to be open-minded about. However, it's not just about being open-minded, because even when we're closed-minded, we should still be open-hearted. Now, what does that mean? That means that I don't have to take on your values. I don't have to believe your perspective to still value you as a human being. And this is the tricky part, Zach. Even when you don't give that to me back. And this is one of the things that is the struggle for many people. Is in our society today, we have this whole concept, I'm a match your energy. What you give me, I'm going to give back. But we've been challenging people, what if we're simply seed planters? What if our conversations are seed planters of moments that people will reflect on later? And it might not even be immediate, but because we're in such a microwave society, I want to say one thing and you to be like, yep, you're right. And that is not how society works. Even if I told you, you have bad posture, you're sitting at home all day creating and your posture sucks. And I tell you, hey, it's better for you to sit up straight. You're not going to sit up straight all the time just because I told you once. You're going to need consistent conversations. Some of you are going to hurt your back. Some of you are going to need to go to the chiropractor. Some of you are going to do all these things. And it's going to be these consistent moments that allow for this transformation of even in your own life. And so how do you get there? It's one, by realizing that everyone has their own power to lean in or lean out of things that we share. And it's not our job to tell people and then immediately expect people to believe what we've already told them. We are seed planters. Why is this important? Even in the book, I talk about this story about one of my former colleagues who was a former skinhead who had very racist, misogynistic viewpoints, very hateful things. And he was like, you know, as I talked to him about like how he got in and how he got out, he was like, oh my gosh, Justin, we loved when people called us names. He's like, I loved it. It was the very same people who we demeaned and disrespected that still chose to show me respect that became those catalyst moments for change for me. And he's like, they'll never know because they don't run in the same circles. And so I tell people, you might just be a seed planter, but it's our opportunity to lean into this conversation. And so it comes down to this summarization of simply this. How do you define respect? And we actually went through this whole, we call it the 10 characteristics of golden respect, where we looked at what society normally defined as respect, and we challenged it to what we call golden respect. And I'm going to call out one. And one of those is that you must earn my respect. Even the phrase of respect is earned, not given. And we started saying, but why? Why is this something, and where did it come from, that you have to earn my respect rather than it being a free choice that I give to you? So I love Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl, powerful, powerful book, where he talks about there's always a gap between stimulus and response, and it's always our choice on how we respond. So I want to plead to all of us, and I'm not saying it's easy, but that's why the more and more we practice this, the more and more we build the James Clear 5-minute habits of diving deep into this, it allows us to more readily receive it. And so do you have to believe what someone else believes? No. Can you still humanize them? Yes. Can you still show that you value them even if they don't value you? Yes. Is it hard? Yes. The more practice that we have in doing it, does it become easier? Yes.
All right, so this is where this is just becoming downright scary, and that I think you might actually have surveillance in my house. It isn't just that you've broken into my Google Drive structure and you see the notes in front of me. I say this because I literally have an entire box right now at this moment filled with copies of Man's Search for Meaning for the in-person retreat that I'm doing for my mastermind students starting tomorrow. Right? Yes. So it's like now it's like where are the cameras?
On your computer, I just tap into the.
Needless to say, it's very clear that you and I are on the same page in the same wavelength, and I agree that going back to this conversation earlier about who can you control and you can only control yourself. Yeah. Ultimately, like you said, it's all about my ability to have that space between what's happening and how I control my response to it. Right. So I tell my students all the time, this comes from Viktor Frankl, comes from Stoicism, right? Yeah. I can't control what's happening around me. I can control my reaction to it. Like you said, holy shit, is that hard right now with all the things that are going on? And like I said, it doesn't matter if this comes out in a week, a month, or a decade. I don't think this is going to be any easier when somebody hears this conversation. And one of the areas that I am both fascinated by this, but it's very frustrating to navigate it as an individual, kind of as an extension of where you said, well, if you just had the information, if you had the facts that I do, you would agree with me. And I think that what happens so much is that we don't have enough perspective. Again, this idea of you can't read the label from inside the jar, where people say, well, this is just how the world works. But your version of the world and your perception of it and your experiences, you don't live in the same world that I do.
Yes.
Like technically, do we all objectively live on Earth? I would presume yes, but if you listen to Elon Musk, there's more than a 35% chance we're living in a simulation. Let's assume for the moment that we actually live in a reality where all of us are on the same planet.
Yeah.
Outside of that, I firmly believe that objectivity is mostly gone at that point, because the way that you're raised, the people that you're surrounded by, the education that you get, when you say, well, that's just how the world works, my response is, no, that's how your world works. That's not how my world works. And it's all about you need to understand and see the world that I'm in so you can see this is the right one, right? It's the same thing with religion.
Yeah.
One of the people that I really love following when it comes to talking about religion is Ricky Gervais. I love this idea where he says, and he's an atheist, by the way, I don't follow him because I too am an atheist.
Yeah.
But the fact that he says, he's like, all right, so of all the gods, all the ones that are out there, you're confident the yours is the right one and everybody else is wrong, because all of those different beliefs believe the same thing. And they're saying, no, this is how the world works. This is how we believe, but everybody's worlds are different. So again, once you start to have those perspectives, rather than, well, let me tell you about my world.
Yeah.
How do we start to have conversations? And more importantly, I'm a really big fan of, I call myself a collector of good questions.
Yeah.
What are the kinds of literal questions we can ask? Rather than, I want to make sure you have my facts. It's more, I want to understand what's the world that you live in and why do you see the world the way that you do?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'll also get to ways that you can actually respect others. And just in a vulnerable moment, right? I also don't believe that you have to be absent of values or absent of things to be able to operate in a space where you operate in a world of respecting others. To be truth told, I'm a Christian. I went to seminary. I studied Hebrew and Greek, right? I operate from a Christian lens, but I don't devalue people who don't operate from the same lens I have, who have different faiths or don't believe in anything, right? And there's ways to do that. And number one, it's by the type of questions we ask people is by being curious. And so in the power of three, it's listening intently. And that's why there's not like this, here are the three types of questions to ask. No, it's by communicating your humility, by communicating you'd like to learn from this person. If I was coming to you and we're talking about this, I was like, hey man, like, have you always been atheist, or is did you grow up in a religious household? Like, and now the conversation's going, right? Instead of having these canned conversations, I'm now able to kind of hear you. And as I'm listening deeply, and this is the part, I'm not listening to refute what you're saying. I'm listening to understand how you got there. And if I can communicate better how you got there, and even if you don't know what else to ask, one of the things we tell people is use the power three words of tell me more, where you're inviting that person to be able to share more. Now, here's the thing. It comes into our pillar number five. I'll jump into pillar four first because I think it's helpful. In seeking the gray, we're after finding common ground, not middle ground, because common ground often implies, middle ground implies 50-50, right? I'm meeting you in the middle. No. But common ground is like, where is there a shared mutual understanding? We both share the mutual understanding that people should be treated well, right? Whether you come from that from a religious perspective or not, that people genuinely should be treated with value, with dignity, and with respect. We come to that in the same place. You know what, Zach? I'm really grateful that we both believe that people should be treated with value, dignity, respect. Not like, well, I believe because you're an atheist, you got to do. No, right? In that common ground place, is a place to start. Let me give you another example, gun rights versus gun control. Instead of saying you're stupid, why do you have a gun in the house? Why don't you have a gun in the house? Why you should keep guns in school? Why you should don't have guns in school? You know what? I'm really glad we both really care about the safety of our kids. That's a different starting place, and it elicits a different type of response rather than you're stupid, you're dumb. Now, how can we still respect in the midst of those disagreements? Now, I love what we call the 3FA framework, where we can fully acknowledge people, whether we 100% agree, 100% disagree, or partially agree and disagree. There's always a way to fully acknowledge people, but we often conflate full acknowledgement with full agreement. Let me tell you how we glean in. Shan Zhao, Stanford professor, has this great concept called thank you because, and she took it from, the comedy, type of comedy where it's not stand-up, it's...
Improv?
Improv, yes, right? Yes, and, right? She took it and she applied it and did a great research on this. And so simply it's something like this. You know, Zach, I want to thank you for sharing your perspective today. It's something I never heard before, and I really appreciate that. Zach, wow, you shared three things. Number two really stood out to me. I'm going to have to dive in deeper for that research, but thank you. Or simply, wow, this was a really big conversation for us to have, Zach. And thank you, because you didn't have to have it with me, but I really appreciate you leaning in and sharing it. Now, not once did I just tell you I agreed with you, but there's always an opportunity to leave people fully acknowledged. And that is the beauty. That's when we don't have to be open-minded all the time, that even when we're closed-minded, we can be open-hearted. And one of those ways to lean into open-heartedness is by fully acknowledging people. I often talk to people and I don't have to tell them my perspective. I don't have to tell them why I disagree, right? I'm like, you know what? Thank you. Thank you for sharing your perspective. And I move on, right? It doesn't necessarily always impact or challenge mine, and sometimes it does. But that's one of the things that we have to come to this place of, that I can still fully acknowledge people even when I don't agree at all.
All right. So now I'm basically going to get some personal therapy from you. So this is not even going to be about the audience. This is just me totally taking advantage of the fact that you and I are on this call right now.
Yeah.
And this is me having developed a tremendous awareness of myself over the years through therapy and a lot of the explorations that we're talking about. Yes. I have a tendency to do what's called perseverating. And perseverating is just continually trying to be understood. When you feel like somebody's not hearing your point, it's like, no, I don't think you're understanding what I'm saying. I don't, it's not even a matter of you don't agree with me yet. It's that my fear is that even though I'm saying these things, I don't feel like the point is getting through, right? And that's created a significant amount of friction, both in my personal and my professional relationships when I collaborate, where somebody says, well, we want the scene to be shorter. Well, I will continually try to explain to them over and over, here's why I really believe the scene needs to be longer instead of shorter, just going on and on and on, right? And what I find happens is, and I think that this happens in a lot of both personal and professional relationships, like, yep, no, you're right. Nope, that's it. Yep, we're good, right? But there's no amount of actually having felt understood or heard. It's that they've just given up And I think that this kind of goes along with this idea, or that these kind of different categories or buckets of respectful disagreement, disrespectful disagreement, disrespectful agreement. Where do we kind of put the category of, yep, no, you're right. Conversation over. You're good. You're always right. Never mind. Yeah. Like, where does
that's
that
disrespectful agreement? Yeah. That's disrespectful agreement, right? I'm agreeing, but I'm actually disrespecting you in that moment because I'm being sarcastic and I'm playing it off, and I'm disrespecting myself because I'm actually not sharing my viewpoint. So there's a couple of ways to approach this, and there's a myriad of different things. But one is, but we have to model the behavior. We can't expect somebody to understand our viewpoint unless we have even also chosen to lean into theirs. And so instead of trying to continue to convince somebody, oh, you didn't hear me, let me take a step back and say, huh, I'd love to hear how you got there, why you think that this is not why we need a longer scene rather than a shorter scene. And now in modeling the behavior, it creates an opportunity and a space to potentially have a more productive conversation. Because normally what happens is that people's defensive walls come up. People are trying to convince you of A and people are trying to convince you of B. One of the best books I read during my MBA, I had one of those really cool MBA professors who was like the Dead Poets Society, late Robin Williams, right? Like he would have us sit in the middle of a room for 10 minutes, do nothing and write a 10-page paper about it. And he had us read one of the books called Dialogue, The Art of Thinking Together. And it talked about by William Isaacs, and it talked about, you know, normally people go into conversations with A trying to convince the other person of A and B trying to convince the other person of B. But his challenge was, what if we created C together? What if there was a C? What if it's not all A and not all B? And C is not often 50-50. C could be 95-5. C could be 60-40. C could be 35-65, right? I was 99th percentile in math, so I can get my numbers right. So in finding C, when we go into these conversations, some of the best creative moments, the innovation, even business results have operated in a place of C. How we even have the computer and the graphics came from calligraphy and all the encode and all these things that Steve Jobs was able to see. This was a C, right? And so until we get to this place of let's find C and not try to debate about why A is completely right and B is completely right, is that we'll often be locked into these conversations that aren't going to be super meaningful. Now, you may say, well, Justin, aren't they just absolutes? And I'd say, well, maybe it's 99-1. And the simple 1% is that they are a human being worthy of value, dignity, respect, that's worthy of hearing their story, worthy of listening, and worthy of fully acknowledging them, even if you don't use anything of what they shared. And that's the different type of conversation. Is it shifts from, you just need to hear more of what I'm saying, because if you knew my facts, you would come to a conclusion. It shifts from, hey, help me understand how you see this. Oh, you just hit me, Zach. I got to share this because I want to share why I suck, right? So we call these the three selves. And it falls into normal psychology. But the three selves is that you operate by these three selves, either superior self, inferior self, or equal self. And I often find myself falling in superior self, right? And I disrespectfully disagreed with somebody on my writing retreat if I respectfully disagree. And this is how it happened. So this guy named Daryl, not the same Daryl Davis, different Daryl. We're on my writing retreat, we're talking, and I noticed him throw away some food. And I'm like, bro, what you doing? Because if you knew how I grew up, we grew up on welfare. We were unhoused. We had government cheese, Spam. We ate whatever was given to us, right? I didn't have the luxury of throwing away food. So I'm like, dude, like, why are you throwing away food? He's like, because I don't like it. I'm like, do you always throw away food that you don't like? He's like, yeah. And then I went for the juggler, challenges parenthood. I was like, so you let your kids throw away food too? Just because they don't like it? And immediately defensive walls went up. And I realized that I was operating in superior self, that my relationship with food allowed myself to say, I'm better than you because I don't throw away food. Now, here's the kicker. I did this thing that psychologists call cognitive dissonance and or this term called illeism, I-L-L-E-I-S-M. And I didn't think it worked before until I practiced it. And it's to talk to yourself in third person. Because what they show is that it creates just enough emotional regulation when our amygdala is hijacked that we can create it, so we can think just a little bit more logically than in that moment of seeing red. And so what I did in my superior self, Justin, I said, hey, Justin, I didn't say this out loud, by the way. I said, what would equal self Justin have done? And I was like, well, equal self Justin would have asked more questions, would have asked Daryl how he grew up with food. Equal self Justin would apologize. And this is important because isn't it interesting how we have so much great advice for our friends, but we don't often listen to the same advice that we give to them? And that's what that moment of cognitive dissonance and illyism does. It creates a place as if we're talking to a friend that we would give the same different type of advice than when we're dealing with the emotions within ourselves.
I have spent almost 10 years now raving about how much I love my topo mat. And I have finally discovered what I now consider the topo mat of desk chairs, the Core 360. The Core 360, spelled Q-O-R, is designed to keep me constantly moving while seated in an upright and balanced position. To learn more about how it works, let's hear from Core 360 founder, Dr. Turner Osler, about why he created the Core 360 active sitting chair.
When you sit badly for many hours a day, and that's really what the problem is. It's very hard to make yourself get up and do jumping jacks every half hour. But if you just swap to a chair that requires you to be muscularly engaged in order not to fall off, it's an easy bar to clear.
For the procrastinators out there who hear all of the statistics and know how bad sitting is and it's the new smoking and they're thinking, that's something I'll worry about in a few decades, you're gonna feel the effects of having more energy at 2 o'clock in the afternoon or 4 o'clock in the afternoon that day.
And that's the whole point. Your core muscles will be stronger, you'll have less back pain. All of this will make you more available for the rest of the pursuits of your life, your kids, your hobbies, your whatever.
For those of us who need to practically live in front of computers to do our best creative work, the Core 360 is going to level up your game. Keep your body moving and keep the creativity flowing. To learn more and purchase what I consider to be the topo mat of desk chairs, please go to optimizeyourself.me/core360. That's optimizeyourself.me/QOR360.
To unpack just the last 5 minutes is probably going to take 4 additional episodes because there are so many good things you brought up. But the two things that came to mind immediately that can be extensions of both of these conversations are actually podcast interviews I've done with other authors. You may already know them, might be in similar circles. One of them, the author's name is Chris Deaver. He wrote the book Brave Together. And it's all about how it's very similar to this idea of how do we have a dialogue where it's A versus B, but we come to C. It's very much about creative, collaborative environments. He was a former consultant that worked for Pixar and Disney. And it was all about understanding that like when we're in our little vacuums and we're coming up with our own ideas and trying to prove our points, the best ideas and the newest ideas come from collaboration and they wouldn't come from an individual otherwise. So this idea of I'm A, you're B, but now let's find C. Right. That's one. And you kind of gave me this amazing realization just as you were talking about this, where professionally I'm very, very good at this. It's like I said, I'm usually the mediator and I'm Switzerland, where I can have a bunch of different voices, whether it's a studio executive, a director, whoever it might be. It must be this way. No, it's got to be this way. But from my perspective, even if I might agree with something totally different, it's What are the problems or the story points or the feelings that are leading you to this conclusion? Great.
Yeah.
Now, what's leading you to this conclusion? Let's not talk about how we solve it. Just tell me what problems led you here. And then all of a sudden you're like, now I see. Like this is the version that I think appeals to everybody's needs and problems, but it's not the solutions that we're bringing towards. So what I often tell people when I collaborate with is don't tell me how to solve it. Just tell me what's not working. So that I can understand from everybody's perspective, why doesn't this work for you? And usually I can connect the dots and find the piece in the middle. But here's the realization that I just had. Why am I not doing that in my personal relationships? I'm really, really good in the room with people. But when it comes to a personal relationship, it's so much more about, well, but no, you must understand why I came to the conclusion that A is correct. And the other person is saying, yeah, but B isn't. I'm like, all right. Agree to disagree, right? Like I'm hearing agree to disagree is like one of my biggest triggers. My other big trigger and the other reference that I wanted to throw in really, really quickly about this idea of speaking to yourself third person. I want to make sure that we throw in the show notes my interview with the author Ethan Cross, who wrote a book, Chatter. And it's all about how to manage and have discussions with the chatter and the voices in your head. And one of the most powerful strategies that I got from it is exactly what you said, talking to yourself in third person.
Yeah.
Right. It's not this idea of I can do this. It's this idea of you can do this. You've got this, right?
Yeah.
Or Zach, why are you experiencing so much anxiety right now? Right. But for me, the biggest part of all of this is just really having a better understanding of, again, not this is how I see the world and this is how you see the world. It's just I really want to understand what are the conditions that created the current viewpoint that you have. And sometimes it's just, well, I like these kinds of movies versus I like these kinds of movies. Or it's this is the way that I was raised and I didn't have any money and we didn't waste food versus we were really affluent. And who gives a shit if we throw our entire meal away if it doesn't taste good? Right. So ultimately, again, it comes back to this idea of being curious, not judgmental, just better understanding. Describe to me the world in which you lived that created the conditions that you see it this way. Right. It's amazing to me that I've gotten so good at this professionally, but it just clicked. I'm like, I need to get much better at this in my personal relationships.
First of all, thank you for your vulnerability because not everybody's willing to admit stuff like that. So I appreciate that. Now it really lets me know like you're all definitely on the right track because none of us are perfect at this, including me. I still make mistakes. I still disrespectfully disagree and all this kind of stuff. Tell you a quick story. Because you talk about personal, is that I almost realized that, and this happened before I leaned into respectful disagreement as a focus, that I did this with my dad. And what most people don't know is I didn't grow up with my dad. When my parents divorced at 4, I'm getting emotional and talk about this. I saw my dad every other weekend and then one weekend a month. And then sometimes I didn't see and or hear from my dad for 2 or 3 years for a myriad of reasons. Right. And it didn't bother me as much when I was younger, just because like I didn't want to always be taken away from my friends, right? Because they were doing stuff on the weekends and I wanted to be able to hang out. But as I got older, Zach, I remember there was just sometimes I pulled off onto the side of the road and just started weeping because I felt like I missed something. Now, what I'm not saying just because people grew up with both of their parents or guardians that they lived a perfect life, because I've heard those stories too. But for me, I felt like I missed something. So in 2019, I was going to go back to Ghana because my dad's from Ghana originally. He was born and raised there. And I was going to go confront him, Will Smith style, right? And I'm not talking about the Chris Rock slap version, but like the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air version, right? Where it's an episode where his dad came back into his life and his dad left. And he's like, it's cool. I'm going to learn how to change a tire, get married, all these kind of things. And what most people have no idea was an unscripted moment. He falls into Uncle Phil's arms. And he's like, why didn't he love me? So that's what I was going to go do. Why don't you love me? Why don't you fight for me? But because I have a really good therapist. And a great Leadership Charlotte cohort. By the way, y'all, get therapy. Zach talked about it. I'm going to talk about it. I don't go to therapy because there's something wrong with me, even though my kids might say something different. But I go to therapy because I want to keep things going right. I'll never stop going to therapy. I may change the frequency, but I never will stop going. But because of my therapist, my Leadership Charlotte cohort, they challenged me to go in, instead of going to confront my dad, to going and hearing his story. A participant later told me, she's like, Justin, they helped you turn a confrontation into a conversation. And as I went and go to hear this story, I was like, Dad, I realized I've never heard your story. Like, I want to learn more about how you grew up and what were the conditions and things. And I learned that my grandfather was a polygamist, right? Not all of Ghana is like that, but my grandfather was a polygamist. And my dad was the first son of the first marriage. And he saw his dad maybe once a week, not once a week, once a month. If that, I learned at the age of 14, my dad went off to school by himself. I learned at the age of 16, he came to the United States by himself. I learned so many things. I learned that Ghana was a more matriarchal society. And so I learned that my dad grew his strengths, not from his dad being there, but from the challenges and things that he had that existed that created who he was. He went on to work for the United Nations and he lectures at Oxford and all these places on developing countries and economics. And so I better understood how my dad got there. Now, I still communicated my truth. I still shared, hey, I wish you would have fought for me. I wish you would have done. But I was able to say, you know what? I better understood how you got there. right? I still disagree with the outcome. Now, why is that important? Because I challenged my perspective with my therapist and my Leadership Charlotte cohort, because in my brain, I had every right to tell him off, to tell he should have been there for me. I became the student by asking, Dad, I've never heard your story. I cultivated my curiosity by asking more questions. What happened with you and my mom? Why was this a disagreement? Why did you try to reach out to me? And so I sought the gray by finding that common ground of like, oh, I can see how you got there. And I agreed to respect, not agreed to disagree, but agreed to respect. And I chose to forgive him, not because he asked me, but because I better saw how he got there and he was doing the best with what he had. And that allowed me and freed me to forgive him. And what I didn't realize, Zach, that was on the other side of that forgiveness was an aspect of my heritage that washed over me in that moment of forgiveness that I'd been holding back because he represented that. And so I tell people, you have no idea what's on the other side of respectful disagreement, because I wouldn't have realized all the work we're doing now in Ghana and building a school and doing clean water projects and representing my heritage in the way that I've done and going back to Ghana once or twice a year now and now having more meaningful conversations, not perfect relationship, but meaningful conversations with my dad stem from respectful disagreement. And so to your point, the same things that we would apply in our professional lives can actually have an impact in our personal.
First of all, I really appreciate you going there and sharing all that. I think that's an amazing story. And it kind of shows that it's not just a matter of, you know, I do leadership development and give speeches, but I'm a very different person behind the scenes, because I'm sure you see that a lot where somebody's got a book or a framework or a course or whatever it is, and they're espousing all of these things. And you realize behind the scenes, they're the exact opposite of everything they talk about. And one of my core values is that I want to make sure I'm the kind of person that practices what they preach. And if there's a misalignment of the things that I'm talking about or recommending my own behaviors, that's something that I need to course correct. And I've learned over the years that that's one of the most common pieces of feedback I get from people that listen to the podcast, read my newsletter, are part of my community. They're like, holy shit, you actually kind of do the things you talk about. I'm like, like that's a core value of mine. And it sucks. It's really hard. It's so much easier to just, you know, pontificate on a bunch of bullshit and not have to follow it. Right. But if I'm not actually doing the things I'm talking about, like that's really important to me. And that's a core part of the world that I lived in and the world that I grew up in is being authentic. Right.
Yeah.
And the reason that I go there, I often deliberate when I'm going to record a podcast. I always want to dig into the deeper why. Ultimately, I want to understand, why is a person the way they are? What are the conditions that made them the way they are, that see the world the way that they see it? Not just in this conversation, but in all of them. So I always ask myself, and this is blatantly stealing from Simon Sinek, do I want to start with why? And today I didn't want to start with why, because I really wanted to go right to the elephant in the room that everybody's thinking. But what I want to do is I want to end with why. I don't think there's an accident that you became the person that's talking about all these things and espousing these ideas. And I'm going to give a very practical example of why I think it's so important to understand where somebody came from, but also where you yourself came from. Because I will fully admit, like I get a lot of books and do a lot of podcasts. I don't read every word, but I read enough to understand the gist of the idea to know where should this conversation go. But as soon as I saw the design of the book cover, I said, there's a reason, there's a place that this design choice came from. And for those of you that are listening, it looks like a black and white cookie. It's half black and half white with a line in between. And I said that there's a story behind this. It's not just the story that happened with a creative team or a publicist. There's core values in the creation of this. And as soon as you started talking about your upbringing and your mom, I'm like, I get it. So tell me a little bit more about the why. What were the conditions that really created the kind of person that you are and the work that you do and the central why to all of your work?
Zach, I love my mom. She's been one of the single most transformative figures in my life. I'm a mama's boy to the best sense of that word. Before I tell you about her, let me tell you about the why of the book and design. And so it's interesting because I initially gave it to, my publisher to have the creative to come up with the book cover. And none of them just resonated with me because for me, it has to be meaningful. It's not just about, will eyes get on this? Will people like it? Well, it's like it has to have a meaning behind it. And for me, I actually drew this up and it's somewhere around here where I have the initial design. It looked much horrible than what they created. But I was like, most people see the world in black and white. And until I tell people, they often don't see that there's a thin line of gray in between the black and white that you have to choose to see. The other thing is why it's slanted is because when you slant your head to look at it and read it, slanting our head is like the universal sign of pondering. It's even when we see like dogs or you know, pets do it, we're like, hmm? And it's like this curiosity of like, huh, tell me more. And that aspect of choosing to slant our heads and leans into that. Now, that's the why kind of the cover. And then obviously respect is in gold, which is gold and respect. So all these things kind of flow together. Now, my mom was the foundation of this for me because my mom, and I didn't realize this till later, I realized I'd never asked my mom her story. And so if you have parents who are living, please ask them their story, or grandparents. Like, don't assume you know it. I thought I knew their stories until I really sat down and asked them their story. And it wasn't until my grandmother died that I started doing these story sessions with my mom and my dad, of just like hearing the story. And my mom told a story to me as I listened to her story. She was one of the first Black female air traffic controllers in the Air Force. And she shared, she said, Justin, there are some soldiers when it 2-year time frame that she'd be stationed in Japan that never left base. And she was like, Justin, I don't want you to be like that. I want you and your brother to leave base, to get to experience the beauty of people and cultures around you. She's not talking about a physical base. She was talking about just a metaphorical base, about what we're comfortable with, what we learn. And so my mom, she would take us to events. We went to Oktoberfest and Polish Festival and Hispanic Heritage Month events and First Peoples powwows. We had exchange students from France and Brazil and Germany and Japan, right? And we can remember, we didn't have a lot of money. But she didn't just do that. She would take us, that I've mentioned, to these events we disagreed with. And what my mom had communicated is that she calls herself a child of the universe, that she was constantly learning. We went to different faith communities, right? Even though we grew up and probably went to church, we would go to a mosque, we'd go to a Catholic church, we'd go to a Jewish event. We went all these things, and it was to plant these seeds. And when I noticed, even in my own life, many years ago, I realized I was confining myself to my circles of comfort. I wasn't living up to my mom's challenge of leaving home base to get to, not to have to get to experience the beauty of people and cultures around me. And when I started doing that, and I started learning more, and I started taking the Circles of Grace challenge, it allowed me to see people and humanity very differently. It allowed me to challenge a lot of my long-held assumptions and beliefs, to take myself out of the jar, to see the actual labels on it and see other people's jars, and allowed me to create with people together. And even when I didn't agree and vehemently disagreed, to create the simple fact that they're a human being worthy of value and dignity and respect, which my mom taught me, that still exists in my heart today.
Well, I very much appreciate you again being willing to share such a, you know, a heartfelt and meaningful story. And as soon as I saw the book cover, I'm like, there's got to be a story here. There's something behind this. And yeah, I just could not imagine a boardroom where they said, well, this color is the one that's converting the most on bookshelves right now. Because you probably had those conversations, right?
Like,
well, based on these leadership circles and based on the very specific niche of your audience, like, these are the color palettes that people are using. And I could see, as soon as I saw the book, I could see the meaning. I'm like, I bet he's like, no. No, this has got to be something else. I'm really glad I asked, because I could just tell, like, I just feel it, because it feels very unique and different, and it feels like it's saying something, which means that you are saying something. So I, like I had said before, I really feel like I could unpack this over 4 separate episodes. And I probably got about 10% of my prep sheet where I've actually crossed off the boxes and said I covered it. I also want to be respectful of your time. So the last question, always the hardest one, what I call the shameless self-promotion portion of the program. Somebody either wants to find your book or they want to find you. How do they engage with and interact more with the work that you're putting out into the world?
Yeah, so I love LinkedIn, and I may be on LinkedIn a little bit less. I've been reading Cal Newport's Digital Minimalism, but
two-time guest on the show, by the way. I totally endorse Cal Newport.
Yes, love his work. I'm like, I just deleted all my social media apps on my phone, by the way.
Nice.
So LinkedIn, Justin Jones -Fosu. You can find me there. I love interacting with people there. But you can also go to howtorespectfullydisagree.com, where we're continuing to put out more information, content. We have a holiday guide. Our respectful disagreement quiz is coming out soon, as well as we have a course. So there's a lot of stuff that's happening, but just practical ways we're trying to give people more value to have more respectful disagreements. Hear my heart. More. Not perfect, but more. And so I'll end with this. Y'all, practice the tortoise principle. Practice. And what does that mean? My favorite fable growing up was the tortoise and the hare, right? But I've been really going against this whole concept that, y'all, we've been mislabeling the tortoise all these years. For those who don't know the story, tortoise and the rabbit tortoise and the hare are getting ready to take a race. The rabbit's like, of course I'm faster. Darts out super fast. Great. Awesome. Looks really good. It's like, I'm ahead. Let me take a nap. Goes, takes a nap. Wakes up. Tortoise is crossing the finish line. Like, rabbit. And for years, I felt we've been calling the tortoise the wrong name. We called the tortoise slow. That's the wrong label. The tortoise wasn't slow. The tortoise was strategic, resilient, and steady. There's a lot of people in our society who are hares and take the hare approach. It looks really good in the moment. They may try it a couple times and be like, I look good. And then go and take a rest. And there's no long-lasting foundational growth that consistently builds into what is that mindset. Take the tortoise approach, y'all.
I'm going to add two more words. I would say that the tortoise was deliberate and the tortoise was consistent. So again, you and I are on the same page, because one of the core mindsets that I teach my students is you got to play a game of chess, not a game of checkers, right? That's if you're good. Just looking for that next move and that next jump, it might work in the short term, but you got to be willing to step back and play the game of chess. So once again, you and I are on the same page. You can go ahead and invoice me at any point for today's personal therapy session and for all of the seeds that you planted and incepted in my mind. Very, very appreciative of all that. But genuinely, this has been an amazing conversation, and I'm going to do my absolute best to try and integrate the things that we talked about into my daily life and my my relationships. So really, I really appreciate it. And I hope that everybody listening find Justin and interact with his work, because it'll make the world a better place for all of us. So thank you, sir. Really appreciate it.
And thank you, Zach. Thank you for asking good questions. Thank you for providing vulnerability. And thank you for your resources, because I've already went and saved the Brave Together on my Amazon wish list. Yeah. So thank you.
You're going to love that. And if you want to connect with Chris, just let me know. I'll make it happen.
Thank you, brother.